This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Joining us on the Jodcast today is Dr. Tom Hansel from the University of Southampton. Hello and welcome to the Jodcast.
Hello.
And you've been using LOFAR to research pulsars. Can you tell us how you do this and what is a pulsar to start off with?
Pulsars are the remnants of dead stars. So when a star reaches the end of its life, it explodes in a supernova explosion. And this leaves behind a small, very dense star. So it's about the size of a city, but it weighs more than the weight of the sun. And they rotate very fast. As they spin, the beam of radiation passes by the Earth, and we see a flash of light. That's what a pulsar is. So what do I do with pulsars is I use LOFAR, which is a low-frequency telescope. Different frequencies of radio emission comes from different heights in the pulsar atmosphere. Because they come from different heights, the light takes slightly longer to arrive when it's closer to the neutron star surface than when it's higher up, because it has further to travel. With LOFAR, we probe the very lowest frequencies observable from Earth. So we probe the highest point in the magnetosphere, and we can see all the way down to the neutron star surface. And actually, all the radio emission comes from within 100 kilometers of the neutron star surface from some of the pulsars that we studied.
That 100 kilometers, so pulsars actually have a really, really small range.
Well, that's the emitting region. Actually, the magnetosphere extends out until the edges rotate faster than the speed of light. So actually, all of the emission comes from, I think it's something like 0.1% of the magnetosphere. The atmosphere of the pulsar is actually much larger, but all of the emission, for some reason, seems to be concentrated in this thin layer above the neutron star surface.
And do you know why this is?
I haven't got an idea yet. That's what we hope to find out with LOFAR, because by looking at the shape of the flash of light that we see, so how long it lasts and if it's got features, we can determine more about the magnetic fields and the structure of the magnetosphere in the emitting region, and figure out how the pulsar emits, which is still not fully understood.
So we don't know what's causing this beam that we can intercept as the pulsar spins?
We have a rough idea. So we know that when electrons spiral around magnetic fields, they emit light. And we know that, well, we think we know that that is what causes this beam of light roughly, but we don't know the specifics. And we don't know the exact composition of the atmosphere of the pulsar, and we don't know how exactly these electrons are spiraling and how they're traveling and how they're arranged.
So by using LOFAR and looking at the top of this emission, and then I'm assuming you combine it with other telescopes that can probe further and further, like the Merlin network, to the surface of the pulsar at higher frequencies, you can get an idea of the emission in the different regions and then hopefully investigate how the pulses are formed.
Well, that's right, yes. So in my PhD, we had observations from LOFAR, and at the same time, also observations with the Jodrell Bank at 1 gigahertz. So LOFAR is below 200 megahertz. Jodrell Bank we observed at between 1 and 2 gigahertz, and we had Effelsberg observations at 8 gigahertz, all at the same time. So we probed the whole range of the pulsar magnetosphere simultaneously, and we were able to see the shape of the pulse profile and check that all the pulses arrived at the same time at the different frequencies.
So that way you all know if you the time delay at the different frequencies, you can account for that, so you can get the whole series in this pulse profile. And what can you tell from the pulse profile?
Well, the pulse profile, we think, maps the shape of the magnetic field around the pulsar. So typically we expect to see two peaks, which corresponds to the two different halves of the magnetic field, although this isn't actually what we see in practice.
So what you expect to see is something a bit like a bar magnet, where you have the lines coming out from the top and the bottom of the north and south pole and combining to the...
Yeah, so if you think of a bar magnet, you have two rings, basically, that go from the north pole to the south pole, and we expect to see a pulse from the left-hand side and a pulse from the right-hand side of the North Pole, and or sometimes you get interpulses, which are the same emission from the South Pole. And because if you think about the dipole again, the bar magnet, the field lines get further apart as you get further away from the magnet. So we expect the two peaks that we see in the pulsar emission to get further apart as you get higher up. And that's why we think we get the shape of the pulse profile that we do. But in practice, that's not always what happens. Sometimes they get closer together at different frequencies. Sometimes there's more than one peak, and sometimes the components appear and disappear. So we still have a lot to learn about what exactly is happening in the pulsar magnetosphere.
Was this quite a surprise then when you looked at this?
So we have one example that's very unusual, where the left-hand side of the magnetic field seems to stay fixed at all frequencies, and the right-hand side of the magnetic field starts on the left of the other component and ends up on the right-hand side. So the components seem to drift through each other. And if you think about the magnetic field configuration, this can't happen, because if you have two magnetic fields that are crossing, you expect a reconnection event. So you can't have magnetic fields lines that cross. Basically, they'll form two separate magnetic field lines. And so we have no way of accounting for this at the moment. We need to study this pulsar in more detail.
So using LOFAR to get a handle on what's actually going on in this unusual object.
Yeah, so at higher frequencies, this crossover doesn't happen. And it's only in LOFAR where we've seen this, the second half of the puzzle, where the component emerges from the left-hand side and goes to the right-hand side. This is only visible at these low frequencies, which is why LOFAR is very important.
I wish you lots of luck using LOFAR, and I guess now you've put some hard grafting as well into building it. So, yeah, good luck in the future research and why this pulse profile changes.
Thank you.